Good evening, and you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm your host, Aisling O'Rourke, and each and every week we try to tackle the climate crisis, but in a manageable way. And this week we are discussing, first off, the energy crisis and our own homes. And I know we've discussed various measures over the past number of months, but the energy crisis is going nowhere. And I think as the temperatures begin to drop and the weather changes, we are all beginning to feel the pain of this particular energy crisis. And we're joined by Tom Halpin of the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. Tom is, of course, Head of Communications for the SEAI. Tom, you are very welcome to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103.
Good evening, Aisling, and thanks very much for having me on.
Tom, I think it's fair to say, I don't know anybody who is not concerned about heating their home this winter. And now that the seasons have changed and we are feeling it a little bit, particularly in the evening times, it's causing considerable stress for householders around the country.
Yeah, Aisling, look, we can all see how the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, horrendous for the people of Ukraine, but it's affecting energy prices across the globe, in Europe in particular, and it's no different in Ireland. So we've seen gas prices rise, we've seen oil and diesel prices rise, and we've seen electricity prices rise with that. And it's definitely causing levels of anxiety and strain on people's purses. That's why the government, of course, has acted with a number of interventions in terms of price supports and the additional credits. But what we're trying to do is help people take a little bit of the pressure out of it for people by helping people to understand how we use energy. And then if we understand how we use energy in our daily lives, we can begin to look at what we can do to reduce that energy use. Now, I'm sure, Aisling, that an awful lot of your listeners are already doing things what they think is best and what they think is all of what they can do. But maybe more of what we have set out in our home energy plan might give additional pointers to help people save more money. And one of the keys here is actually that we're focusing on is that it's no longer little small things that are important. It's about making big changes and making many big changes. But a lot of the advice we're giving is common sense and easily achievable for most people in their homes without being uncomfortable or without being unsafe in their homes at too cold a temperature, etc.
Now, Tom, I was lucky enough when I was doing my undergraduate back in the noughties to do a semester abroad in Australia. And I was really surprised at the time that when I arrived in the country and attended my induction for the university that I was going to be studying at for my semester abroad, that I was given a little egg timer with a suction cup for the shower. And the idea was at that stage, because Australia has historically suffered very badly from drought, that we all were to take no more than a 4-minute shower. And this was a standard thing that was being given out to households right around the country. And, you know, it was a long time ago, Tom, but it does seem like we need practical things like that in our day to day lives. And it's a very easy thing to do. You stick this thing up in the shower, swivel it around, and, you know, once the little sand goes to the bottom, that's it, your shower's over. What kind of measures are you suggesting in the SEAI that we take this winter?
Okay, well, I think, as I said earlier, we all use a lot of energy in our daily lives, and it gives us great comfort, it gives us great utility, it gives us great convenience. So when we get up in the morning, as you say, we have a shower, we go downstairs, we put on the kettle, we put on a bit of toast, we go out in our cars and we drive our cars, we go into the work or we drop the kids to school or whatever it is, and we use light, we use heat, we use appliances for washing and drying, etc. All of those are using energy. And the bottom line is that actually in our homes, we use about a quarter of all of Ireland's energy. One quarter is in our homes. So that's energy we are using. And about a fifth of our energy is used in private motoring. And I'll come to the shower in a moment, actually, because that's a really useful tip. But let's start with the biggest energy use in our home. And most people will be aware of this. It's heating. Heating accounts for 60% of your energy use in your home. So that's heating the rooms and in some instances contributing to the heating of hot water if you have a central heating system that's heating your cylinder as well. So if that's where 60% of your energy has been used, it makes sense to think about that first and say, right, how can I save energy? Now, your point, the first point you make about timer for the shower is really salient here. Because actually, not all of us are great at time control on our heating system. So we put it on maybe at 6 o'clock because we should be up at 7:30 and we want the house to be warm. We put it on at 4 o'clock because we think we'll be in at 5:15 and we want the house to be warm. But most houses of even moderate efficiency, the house will heat up in about half an hour.
Well, it will, Tom, if it's a nicely insulated house. But I know, like, my own family home at home is, you know, it's an old bungalow and it takes a while to heat up.
That's what I said. That's why I actually said, if it's a moderately efficient home. There are inefficient homes, and we can come to what to deal with underlying inefficiency in the home in a moment.
Okay.
But let's take a moderate, you know, 1980s, 1990s quality of home that has some insulation in the walls and some insulation in the attic. Not a 2021 A-rated home, but just one that has some insulation and probably has double glazed windows. It may not be everyone, and I'm sure some of your listeners are living in stone-built cottages or old bulk cement, bulk concrete wall built. They're different. But the vast majority of homes can be heated within, say, 30 to 45 minutes. And it's up to yourself. You'll find out. But the point being, there's no point in having your heating on any longer than that before you get up. So if you know that your house takes, let's say your house actually takes 45 minutes to heat up, there is no point in putting the heating on an hour before you get up or an hour and a half before you get up. And there's no point in putting it on an hour and a half before you come in, because all it's doing is keeping it warm for you until you come in. Whereas what you want is, you really want it to hit that sweet spot of being warm as you arrive.
So okay.
Our advice is, generally, now it depends on the house, 30 minutes before you get up, 30 minutes, turn it on 30 minutes before you get up, turn it off 30 minutes before you go out to work or to school or whatever, turn it on 30 minutes before you come home, turn it off 30 minutes before you go to bed. There's plenty of heat in that. Now, even turning off the heating for an extra half an hour or an hour will save you considerable sums of money.
And like, Tom, we should say, like, you could easily sit at home on a winter's night and test this out. You know, like, you
absolutely.
Set a timer on your phone, and how long does it make you? Does it take until you feel the house is warm enough to be satisfied?
That's exactly it, I think. This is about letting people live comfortably. We're not saying turn it on 50 minutes before and you'll get up and it's cold. We want people to get up and their house to be warm. Mm. We want people to arrive home and their house to be warm. We just don't want people leaving the heating on needlessly. Now, of course, you'll need a timer to do that. And if you're in a house that doesn't have a timer, well, it will be one of the best investments you'll make is to get a timer. Now, just to step to the other side of where we can save really significant sums of money if we're in any way wasteful, and that is the temperature of the house. Because a comfortable temperature in a house or in a room, a living room, is 19 degrees. We have a tendency to overheat homes, and if you do overheat your home, just 1 degree of an increase in temperature, it will probably increase your heating bill by about 10%. 1 degree increase it by 10%. And so what we say is 19 degrees in the living area, and actually in the hallways and circulation spaces, and even up in the bedrooms, all you might need is 15 or 16 degrees. And we still want people to stay warm and well this winter. So if there are old or infirmed or indeed particularly young babies in the house, they will need warmer temperatures. So don't do anything that will compromise people's health. But for the average family, two adults, two children, all healthy, 19 degrees is fine, and 30 minutes before you get up, turn on the heating. Now, that could save you 10 or 15% overall between the time and temperature control on your heating bill. And to put that in context, let's say people at the moment are horrified at the price of diesel, which is tipping around €2. A 10 or 15% reduction in your energy consumption is like reducing the price of diesel in your tank to €1.70. Now, who wouldn't run down the road to do that?
And
so
Tom,
it's well worth their while.
You mentioned
there, it takes time to change the habit. Sorry,
yeah, it does. And you mentioned there that, like, if you don't have, if you're in an older house, perhaps without a timer on central heating. Is mm-hmm. it, now I know it's next to impossible to get tradespeople at the moment. I'm trying to get my own electrician into me. So I feel people's pain on that one. But is it expensive to get a timer installed?
It's not expensive because actually what it is, you know, it's a commodity item. Time and temperature control, basically it's a small electrical circuit. They'll put the timer in an accessible area, maybe in the kitchen or your utility room. They'll put your thermostat in a suitable area in the hall or up in the landing or wherever is deemed a suitable place. And actually, a lot of these are now wireless. They communicate by a small little battery transmitter, which means that you don't have to chase wires all over the place. And they wire a little receiver to your boiler and then put the timer in the thermostat wherever they're actually needed. So there's not a lot of electrics involved. And, you know, I don't want even to suggest the price, but you're talking a small amount of money, a modest amount of money. And if you're going to save €200 or €300 on your energy bill, and you will save that next year and you'll save it the year after. Now, it's hugely important, of course, not just to install them, but to use them. And that's why I'm urging people who have these controls, please use them. If you don't have them, please get them. And if you want to go for a really high-end control system, there's two benefits there. First huge benefit for going for a high-end control system is SEAI offers grants for 24/7, they're called 24/7 zone controls. So it allows you to put different times for different times of the day and different days of the week, but also different parts of your house. And there's a grant of up to €700 available for that. Now, that may involve more interference with your heating system to split it into, say, upstairs and downstairs and hot water. It is so well worth it because if you're getting up in the morning and coming home in the evening, say, and you don't want to have a shower, why would your heater still in there full of water? Or if you're getting up in the morning and you're not going to go into the living room to watch the TV, why would you heat your living room? So these controls allow you to decide where the heating's on, at what time, and at what comfort level. And that is sort of the north star of heating controls, that it's on where you want it, when you want it, and the temperature you want it. And just to simplify this as well, any time you're turning on the heating and not really taking advantage of it, be it in a room or in your house, it's like turning on the kettle because you might have a cup of tea in an hour. You've just boiled the kettle for no reason at all because you can wait an hour and boil it and still be hot, you know?
I'm sure there's many people listening, Tom, who've boiled the kettle 10 times today and then forgot that it was boiled and had to reboil it again to make that cup of tea.
Unfortunately, although I think they may be less numerous nowadays, because I really do believe with the level of inquiries that we're getting, the level of interest we're getting in our grants, the level of the number of people who are accessing our website for advice, I think, unfortunately, as a result of the conflict, but in one way, it's a good thing. People are finally waking up to the fact that energy is a very expensive commodity. And even were the war to end, there will be other things that will cause our energy prices to stay high. Fossil fuels are not an inexhaustible supply. So we may get a slight resumption of lower prices if this appalling war were to end. But when they start to become scarce, or if there's a conflict somewhere else from where we get our coal or where we get our oil or where we get our gas, all of these risks are always there. And the only way to insulate individual homes from it is reduce your use now. Use less energy. You'll be paying for less units, however expensive they are.
So, Tom, we focused on heating and how important it is. And I completely understand why you wanted to start off with heating. But what else could we be doing? Because I'm mindful of the fact that many people will be looking at their homes going, God, I know there's a lot I could change here, but I can't afford to do it right now. I need to save up and I have to go for those grants. And it's a long-term project. But you know, what could we be making, what could we be doing today to save on those energy bills this winter?
Well, there's two other areas. So after you do heating, the two other areas that we focus on are hot water. And you'll note a theme all through the three stages. Anything that adds heat uses a lot of energy. That's the bottom line. If we need heat, it takes a lot of energy, therefore a lot of money, and therefore a lot of carbon dioxide emissions. So hot water is the next one. Most people use an immersion heater. put a timer on it. Don't have it running and then forget about it. Go to bed. That's your boiling kettle. You're boiling a 200 litre kettle all night if you leave your immersion on. So our mammies and our daddies were right in the 70s when they were telling us this fact. It pains us all to admit, but when our parents are right, but they were. So get a timer on your immersion heater. Then you can pop it on for half an hour just to have the shower or give the kids a bath or whatever it is. Also make sure the cylinder is well insulated. That will keep the water hotter for longer, which means you can actually, and this is an important consideration at the moment, means you could turn on the immersion heater at, say, half four, have a full cylinder, or have your cylinder with enough water in it by 5 o'clock, but you're not using the immersion heater during peak times. And ESB networks want us to avoid using electricity as much as possible during peak times, so only use the essential electricity. So that's hot water usage, that's hot water heating, but then it's the use. And now we're straight on to your shorter showers.
Yeah.
3 minute timer, 4 minute timer. Sing your favourite song, except perhaps Stairway to Heaven, because I think that's about 8.5 minutes long. But sing your favourite pop song, 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes. What some people will be alarmed at is just how long of a shower they normally take, because it could take the full side of an album to do the full shower. Shorter showers are good. And if you can, avoid using heated power showers, the sort of electric showers, they're more efficient than they used to be, but there's still a less efficient way of heating hot water overall than using your immersion and just using a small amount of smaller amount of water with a normal sort of gravity fed shower.
So, Tom. So, for instance, I have an electric shower. So you're saying that really that they're not exactly great. Is that?
They're not. They are very heavy on. They're very high energy use, particularly if you've already heated a cylinder of water in the, which are say your central heating, because that's a more efficient way to heat your hot water. And generally, they will use the amount of energy they use in a 3 to 4 minutes is substantially higher than the amount of energy is used to use a traditional shower run from a cylinder.
Okay.
But
okay.
In some instances, it's all that people have.
Mm.
And if that's the case, we're not saying go and rip it out, but we're saying that's where it's really important to cut your 7 minute shower to a 4 minute shower or your 8 minute shower to a 5 minute shower. Because if you do that, you're cutting out a large chunk of your electricity use in terms of the shower.
Because to be honest with you, Tom, I thought, I rarely use my own immersion. You know, it's rarely switched on in my house because I have an electric shower and I have a dishwasher. So, you know, I could go months without turning on the immersion, and that's in my own home. So I would have thought I'm just heating enough water to have the electric shower. And also, if I were to use, say, an immersion fed shower system, I'd be running the water until I got the hot water and then maybe wasting water. So in my head...
There are some considerations like that.
I think a lot of people will be thinking along similar lines to me. They might be surprised to learn that the electric shower isn't the best when it comes to energy costs.
Yeah, well, it's the fact that it's pumped as well.
Okay.
And it still takes a little bit of a while to warm up. It's not as long as the gravity fed. But you see, what I'm talking about here primarily is if you have a cylinder that has more than anything, if you have a cylinder that's fed from your central heating, then you already have hot water. But your power shower will generally only take cold feed. So it's heating water from cold to hot.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, and if we can move on, actually, that carries on the theme that anything that adds heat.
Okay.
Uses a lot of energy. And when we talk then about electricity, the big focus is on appliances and typically what might be called the wet appliances. Your dishwasher, your washing machine, your dryer. Now, the oven comes into it as well because obviously an oven, its primary function is
to heat.
But if you think about with a washing machine, and it's interesting, I was talking to someone about this just recently. So with a washing machine, the more water it uses and the higher the temperature, you're going to use a lot of energy. So double the amount of water, double the amount of energy, double the temperature, double the energy still more. So, you know, if you double the water and double the temperature, you're quadrupling the amount of energy you're going to use, which is frightening.
Mm.
Now, this is where, and a lot of people ask this question, but the economy mode on my washing machine seems to take for ages. Some people get a new washing machine and they're taken aback that either the dishwasher or the washing machine in economy, in eco mode or in the high efficiency load or whatever the button says, takes maybe 2 hours to do the wash rather than 40 minutes. The reason is it's using far less water and lower temperatures. So even though it's taking time, but it's going back to the tradition, again, maybe giving credit to our mammies and daddies, well, maybe more the mammies doing the laundry. It's basically soaking the clothes or rinsing and soaking the dishes for longer.
Okay.
So it's using lower temperatures and lower amounts of water, but just letting the water and the lower temperature do the work over a longer period of time. So whereas people say, well, put it on for a quicker wash quite often uses a higher temperature and more water because it's trying to really
so therefore
flush the dirt out.
Yeah, and therefore it's more
using
expensive.
Far more energy.
Yeah, okay, right. And Tom, like, I'm conscious that people are listening to this and they'll be trying to pay attention, but it can be overwhelming. Like, can we go on to the SEAI's website and do a bit of an energy check on our homes?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you led into that, Aisling. Well, first of all the information is available on our website. In the area, FEAI.ie, reduce your use. There's a special section called reduce your use. But what I'd like to urge your listeners to do is to log into FEAI.ie/home energy plan. And the reason I'm suggesting a home energy plan is it's a new campaign we've kicked off. It'll be kicking off early next week. And it'll give all the advice and tips that I've been giving there and more, and some video support and some reminders and nice images. But it'll stagger them over a period of a few weeks. So rather than overwhelming people, as I fear I may have with all of the advice this evening, but rather than overwhelming people, it'll give you the advice about your heating and then give you a week, 10 days of your own choosing before you get the next email, which will then talk to you about hot water, and then you have a break. And it's only after you open each email that you'll get the next one. So you can take your own time and learn the new habits. It does take us time to learn new habits. You know, now, albeit that we've proven through COVID, we're really good and really resilient at learning and sticking to new habits, you know. So if we do this for energy, if we respond in the same way, we're benefiting ourselves and our families, but we're benefiting the country as well with lower emissions. So FEAI.ie/home energy plan, you can sign up. The only reason we want people to sign up is so as we can deliver the content, deliver these emails in a staggered way rather than all at once. But if you don't want to sign up, that's fine. All the content is available on our website anyway.
Well, Tom Halpin, Head of Communications with the SEAI, thank you for all that information. And of course, if you'd like to listen back to Tom, perhaps you were listening to us while you're driving this evening and you're thinking, I didn't get a chance to take down all those tips and tricks, Let's Go Green is available as a podcast. So we're on Spotify, Google and Apple Podcasts, I should say. So if you want to listen back to what Tom said there, or maybe you want to send it on to the most energy consuming member of your household, dare I suggest, you can do so with ease. Tom Halpin, of course, from the SEAI there. Thank you very much for your time this evening. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I am delighted that we got time to speak with Tom Halpin about the things that we can do in our own homes to save our energy bills this winter, because I know we're all stressed about it. We're all worried about it. I don't know anybody who isn't. But it can seem like a massive and overwhelming problem and something that we might need thousands and thousands of euro to address. But this new home energy plan that the SEAI is launching to help us make these changes gives us some practical tips and tricks. So just to remind you, the website that Tom Halpin was mentioning there was SEAI.ie/home energy plan. Okay, so that's SEAI.ie/home energy plan. You can sign up there, get your emails on a maybe a weekly or a fortnightly basis to help you make new habits. You know, I remember a doctor a long time ago telling me that it takes 8 weeks to form a habit, but 2 weeks to fall out of it. So these are things that we know are common sense, but perhaps we're not doing them in our day-to-day lives. So log on to the SCAI's website there, sign up for this new plan and let them give you help to reduce your energy bills this winter. I know I'm going to be signing up after the show tonight, so maybe you might want to join me and we'll try and reduce our energy bills together. I'm afraid I have to take another ad break now, as our chat with Tom went on a little bit longer than it should have done. But hey, it was interesting and great to get his advice on it, and I hope you found it helpful. You're listening to Let's Go Green. I hope you are enjoying our show so far this evening here on Midlands 103. And now we are joined by David Maloney of Moulby Bikes. Now, David, you're welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
I mentioned you there off air when I was driving through Tullamore in the wee hours of the morning about a week ago now. I thought I was imagining things. I was en route to Midlands 103 to the station and saw these bright yellow things that looked very much like hire bikes. And I was wondering, what on earth are these doing in Tullamore? So can you give us a bit of an insight into why do we have hire bikes now in Tullamore? How did this all happen?
Yeah, you can indeed. So, yeah, they are bright. And God, you were quick off the mark, because we literally only launched them officially 2 or 3 hours after that. So you were one of the first people to see them, I'd say, out and about. But yeah, and they're also very bright, which obviously helps from a area of safety and people recognising them and things like that. But basically, for 6 months now, we've been running pilots with various councils in the Midlands. So in Athlone and Mullingar, we've had them out there, and that's working along with the councils. But if I go back a couple of years, we've been running both e-bikes and pedal bikes across Dublin City since 2020. And we also have a lot of, bikes in general, you know, along other verticals, not just in the sharing area. But how it happened in Tullamore then, I guess the councils are, you know, they're always discussing with each other what each are doing and what's the stuff that's working. They're all under a certain amount of pressure, if you want to call it that, where they have to start meeting their environmental commitments.
Yeah.
To start reducing emissions and things like that. And I guess across Europe for quite some time now, in general in Ireland we're a little bit behind it, but across Europe for quite some time now, there's a big movement on the kind of active travel world, should we say, and the reduction of car usage and things like that. So I guess it was a combination of all of them things that brought Tullamore to then start looking further at this. They released a tender then, an open tender. We applied for it and we were granted the licence. It's a 6 month pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess that's it. We'll run it for the 6 months and then we'll take it from there.
So, like, I think most people listening to the show, they will be familiar when we go abroad, when we go to larger cities, the facility to hire bikes, whether it's that you have to go to a specific type of like bike rack in the city, or if you go on an app on the phone and find one near you. I think we're kind of, that's been around a while, particularly in Dublin for quite some time. But in towns in the Midlands, like, I suppose when you mention Athlone there, like, I think, okay, they've got the university there in the town. They've a big student population. Students tend not to be able to afford cars. I can see the logic as to why it might work somewhere like
town as well, Athlone is,
exactly. Yeah. So I can see the logic. Whereas Tullamore is that, and now I'm born and bred in Tullamore and I'm very proud of it. I'm not doing the town down before anybody gives out to me.
Yeah.
But I just, from your own perspective, is there a market for hire bikes in towns like Tullamore and Mullingar and towns of that size?
Yeah, well, first of all, let's park Athlone then for a minute. If we go to Athlone or to Mullingar, we've been running that for over 6 months, and now we've recently extended that contract with the council. I guess it's like a lot of things. It is hard initially to get anything new that's up and going. But like, we can't have a situation around the globe where bikes and the sharing world is only available in major cities because where the ridership is going to be really high. We have to start cracking the nut in smaller towns and cities around the place. Otherwise, we're going to leave 80% of the population away from this service. So we have to start cracking the nut. It is a very fair question. Of course, we're not set up to expect the same kind of ridership that we'd be getting off the bikes in the middle of Dublin city centre or the middle of Cork or any of the major towns and cities. But that's not to say that we can't make this work and we can't make it function. You know, I moved around Tullamore myself last week there when we were launching the bikes in particular. And it's quite a flat town, which is obviously good. So that's one of the reasons why the council haven't yet moved to an e-bike model as well and haven't supported the e-bike. So when, as any sharing operator will know, when you move to e-bike models, you do need very good ridership because they're a hell of a lot more expensive to both procure and run. So you need very, very strong ridership. But I think the councils have been very brave of these smaller towns, should we say, where they're saying, OK, well, let's get some pedal bikes out. It's definitely not remotely as costly to run as an e-bike. And just start cracking the nut to let people be aware of this service and start using it. So, we have to start somewhere. I can't guarantee you it's going to be a success. There's no guarantees in life about anything. But after our experience, particularly in Mullingar, we believe we can make a fist at it. And the council are giving us the opportunity to try. So,
now, as I said, I was born and raised in Tullamore. And I have to admit, I had a general assumption that if you grew up in the Midlands, you had a car. Okay, yeah. Hands up. I really thought that. And what alerted me to the fact that an awful lot of people don't have access to a car was COVID. Because I lived on the road, or I live on the road in Tullamore, where the testing centre was. And I was really surprised by when I was out during the very beginning of lockdown, and we were only allowed in our 2 kilometre circle. And I used to do, there was a loop that myself and my mum used to do together twice a day just to keep ourselves sane. And you'd meet people along the way and they were asking for directions to the test centre. And they were walking from one side of the town to the other, which if you're not well, is not an easy walk to do. So there's part of me that thinks that this is great, that at least there's a certain portion of society who might not have transport of their own now. There's an option in the town, which we've previously not have. And we have local town link services, but we don't really have much public transport. So if you're somebody who, if you just go on that basic level of someone who doesn't drive and they just want to maybe get to the supermarket easier or go for meet friend for coffee a little bit easier, how do you go about hiring one of these bikes? How does it work?
So there's a couple of different ways. There's one way really, but there's a couple of ways to get there. So you can download the app, the MobiMove app, right? You can do that now. You don't need to be at the bike or anything to do that. You sign up to it. It's a fairly simple procedure like most, most apps and stuff that you sign into. And that's it, pretty much. You have the app, and then when you go to the bike, you can look on the app. It'll tell you where the nearest bike is, and you go to the bike, and then you scan the bike, and it talks you through the procedure of how you unlock it and the rules around it and where you can park it and things like that. Or the other way then is just to walk straight up to a bike, and there's a little barcode on the bike, which is a deep link. And once you scan that with the camera on your phone, it'll automatically take you to the App Store or the Play Store. And you just download the app that way and follow the same procedures.
So is that a QR code, like a little mini barcode? And you scan that on your phone for people who might not have done this before. It's a little square barcode you're looking for. And you scan it on your phone. If you've got an iPhone, you might actually have to go to the QR scanner section. Sometimes the phone doesn't, the camera doesn't do it for you. It doesn't always work right in my experience. So you've got that extra backup there. Okay, so,
But if that's not working, you can just do a search on the Play or the App Store for MobiMove app, and it'll come up also,
So then you have to, this is not, you set up how long you want it for, and can you just drop the bike anywhere, or
So the, as you're signing up, different, like, the kind of rules of it and all are presented to you, and there's other kind of, you know, bits of information on the bike and stuff like that about what you are and what you're not allowed to do. But yeah, you don't have to, like, tell the app or anything how long you're going to have it, because most people actually don't really know, to be honest. You might, you know, when you get used to the service, you'll know, but initially you don't know. A lot of people just go up and try it automatically, just, you know, sometimes for a bit of fun or for a bit of perusing around the town or whatever they want to do. So yeah, you don't need to answer that kind of a question. You just need to obviously answer who you are, etc., etc., and then once you scan on, it'll show you to go through the instructions of how you unlock the lock, because there's a lock that's gonna, that where you need to tether it around a Sheffield stand, which is a bike stand for other language. And yeah, so you unlock that and you just get up and you cycle away then. And then you, regarding parking it, then it shows you on the app where you're allowed park it, where you can cycle it. It's because they're pedal bikes in Tullamore, you can actually cycle them anywhere you want, but you won't be able to end the ride unless you're back within the service area, which is Tullamore and its surrounding area, you know. So if you want to cycle it to Birr, you're welcome to, but you'll have to bring it back to Tullamore to be able to actually end your ride. And then, yeah, you can park it at any of the Sheffield stands. And again, it'll walk you through the instructions of how you park it, which is pretty simple, really. You just wrap the chain around the stand and close the lock and then hit the button on the app, and that's it. You're done and dusted.
So, David, there's one of these stands maybe near where I'm living now in Tullamore, because I know there are some in residential parts of the town, and you want to hop on one of these bikes and rent it out because you need to go into town to do maybe a little bit of groceries, meet a friend for a cup of coffee. How do you know that when you come out of the shop, the bike's still going to be there? Nobody would have taken a liking to it, shall I say, while you were having your coffee.
So there's two things here. One is you don't, right? As I said earlier, there's no guarantees in life. But yeah, so you can pause the ride if you want to make sure that the bike is still there for yourself. You can pause the ride, but you're going to have to pay for that option, because don't forget, this is a sharing scheme. So you don't own the bike for your own perusal, should we say. But yeah, so you can pause it, but you will be charged. But it's a very, very cheap service, because the council are subsidising it. So it's only like €1 for an hour. So it's a very cheap service. So yeah, you want to go in for a coffee, just pause the bike, and that way you can be sure nobody else will be able to get on it, because you'll lock it and only your app will allow it to be unlocked then, you know.
Okay.
Because it's locked into your app then, or your account. But otherwise you can just park it there, and then when you can come out, you can look at the app, and if it's gone, you can just look at the app where the next closest one is. There's a good number. I mean, 30 bikes for the size of Tullamore is reasonable to start with. So most of the time you will have a bike available whenever you want. And like we're constantly looking at the data on the back end. So if they're very, very high usage, well, then we'll increase the bikes, or we'll talk to the council about that.
Should say for listeners in Mullingar and Athlone, we're talking about Tullamore just as an example of how this all works. Yeah. Okay, we don't want to leave the Westmeath listeners out here in the conversation.
Well, they'd be well used to this now at this stage. Anyway,
exactly. So from your own perspective, like, you've been up and running in Westmeath longer than you have in Offaly. How has it been going?
Yeah, it's been going very well. I mean, we're entering into the winter months, so naturally, ridership on any micro mobility device is going to drop a lot. It probably drops to about a third of what you would expect in the height of summer. So now we're entering into that phase where we know, you know, ridership's going to be a lot lower. But we launched, you know, before summer, we launched in Mullingar and Athlone. And I mean, ridership was, you know, very high. You know, we serviced events like the FLA that was on and things like that, where we gave extra bikes. So yeah, overall in the it's definitely gone as good as we could have expected, you know, considering we only initially launched in the Midlands, should we say. It went as good as we could expected, yeah.
What about people then? Like, I think, like, obviously this is a growing area, as you said, okay? And and I'm also conscious that time is against us. So sorry for interrupting you there, David. But I'm just thinking, what about people with mobility issues that at the moment at least have very little option other than driving their perhaps an adapted vehicle into town or into the city centre? Like, are there any developments? Like, can we have, I don't know, like a wheelchair user friendly electric bike, or are there alternatives there?
Yeah. So, you know, a common phrase, like, again, I know I keep mentioning this micromobility kind of word, and a lot of people may not be familiar with it. It was a phrase that was coined a few years ago, but it's very, very common now throughout Europe, throughout the world, really, and everything to do around active travel and these electric devices that go slower than 25 kilometres an hour and things like that, right? But a very common phrase in this industry now is, or a common kind of statement that's been made, is that this decade is going to be the decade of the cargo bike, the e-cargo bike, right? So e-cargo bikes are absolutely fantastic. There's tons and tons of companies are after popping up all around Europe over the last few years, building absolutely brilliant e-cargo bikes that can carry like a ton of weight, a ton of half of and half weight there. They can practically carry as much as a small van can, and they can be cycled on cycle lanes. They're only a meter wide because of the motor powers in them. So then you start adjusting that. Well, they take people, they take goods, they take everything, right? There's just some fantastic initiatives going on. There's a Cycling for Age initiative that started here with some of the councils up around Dublin, where, you know, you can book for free. You can book one of these things called a trishaw, and they will have somebody that's already qualified as a pilot to cycle this thing, and you, as a carer, along with the person who maybe has mobility or issues or whatever, can go and get one of these, and they will cycle you around the town in one of these things. And they're basically just a bike, a slightly wider bike with a seat on it, but they'll do the cycling for you. So again, I'm not saying that fully answers your question, but it's just another example of the initiatives that are happening. It's not a situation that the world is just ploughing on and then, you know, you either have a car or you can't do anything. Like, there is an awful lot of solutions coming out, and everybody is working on these solutions. It's back to my other point. Like, we all have a responsibility to start trying them where we can and when we can. And as you try one, we learn from it, and then a better one comes out. Do you know what I mean? As we go along.
Well, David Maloney of Moby Bikes. Again, if you want to hire one of these bikes, David, you go to the Moby Move app, and they're available, am I right in saying, in Athlone, Mullingar and Tullamore at the moment?
Yeah, and Dublin.
and well, of course, in the capital city. But right, we if you're in the Midlands, you can test them out and let us know what you think of them in Athlone, Mullingar and Tullamore. David Maloney of Moby Bikes, thank you very much for your time. I'd be very interested in hearing what listeners have to say about these hire bikes in the Midlands. Have you tried them out? Have you enjoyed them? Do you like them? What do you make of them all? Get in contact with us at letsgogreen@midlands103.com. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and indeed on your preferred podcast platform. What did you make with my conversation with David Maloney there of Moby Move? I saw a photograph during the week of a hearse powered by an electric bike and cyclist, and I thought, that's logical. Why haven't we been doing that already? Oftentimes, motor car hearses are travelling relatively short distances, maybe from the church in the town to the nearest graveyard. You know, is it a bit daft, or is it, why didn't we think of this before? I think there's definitely an opportunity for something like that here in the Midlands. And hey, if someone wants to give me the money to invest in it, we'll go from there. Well, look, I thoroughly enjoyed my chats with my contributors, David Maloney of Moby Move and Moby Bikes, I should say. That app again is Moby Move, and Tom Halpham of the SEAI. If you'd like to get in contact with me to discuss an item on the show or suggest an item for the show, please drop us a line through midlands103.com. Just search for Let's Go Green, or indeed my own name, Aisling O'Rourke. Have a great week. I'll be back same time next week here with Let's Go Green.